Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
Thanks so much for being with us. It's Mental Health Awareness Month. And just now we are talking about the role that finances play on our mental health. I'm joined by Dr. Marion Borchardt. He's the senior manager and head of Wellbeing at Afrocentric, a Sanlam subsidiary. Dr. Borchardt, thanks so much for your time on Kaya Biz. What's the relation between finances and our mental health?
Thank you so much, and good evening to you and to the listeners. Yes, it's really an important topic to discuss because those two things are so intricately linked. On the one hand, people with debt are significantly more likely to experience mental health problems. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, people with mental health problems are also more likely to be in debt and have financial ill health, so to speak. So it's quite an important contributor to a lack of mental health, if we want to put it that way. And it's really an important topic to discuss, and that link, to unpack what that link is absolutely all about, and therefore really a critical topic to cover in Mental Health Month. And as we are heading off into all these campaigns we do, I know very often we look at other aspects contributing to mental illness, but financial management and financial ill health really is quite a big contributor.
Mm-hmm. What is financial insecurity?
So financial insecurity means that you do not feel that you can meet your financial commitments on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And that is, it could be a range of things, just normal living expenses. But financial insecurity, even, when you introduced me, you spoke about the fact that I head up Wellbeing within the Afrocentric group. Mm-hmm. So really who we're dealing with are people within employment. But even within that group, you have a sense of financial insecurity. People are always concerned about their jobs. They're always concerned about what they're earning. Mm. People feel they don't earn enough. After COVID, people are also dealing with bigger families and taking care of more people because people lost their jobs. And of course, with the economy being what it is. So that lack of security in terms of knowing that all your just daily expenses are covered really is what we would speak about as basic financial insecurity. Yeah. And then, of course, I'm not even speaking about people that are in unemployment. I mean, that's not what I'm here to discuss today, but 100%. Think about, all the young people out there. Think about the older people as well who are not in employment, and the big numbers that we hear. We just hear these big percentages, but these are people's lives. So I would throw that into our little basket here that we're discussing at the moment. Yeah.
I love that we're discussing this topic because anecdotally, sometimes you joke that you can see people are happier, when the salaries come in or when it's month and more people are buzzing, smiling at each other. And then as you go further and further into the month, maybe not so much happiness and excitement. And that speaks to the point that you're making. But I think also interesting that you say that financial insecurity impacts you on a long-term basis.
Yes.
So if you're someone who is earning, or if you're someone who is a contractor, which we're seeing a lot of now, freelancer, especially in the media industry, and so many industries which are employing people but not giving them the benefits of employment, that's also going to, you said it, they carry an invisible burden.
Yeah. They carry this, definitely this invisible psychological burden. Because ultimately, when people retire, you would assume that, someone has been working for many, many years and that they would reap the benefits of, having some retirement savings. However, that's not always the case. That's not even always the case for our full-time workers, but barely so when it comes to our contractors. So that really is a big, big problem when people are not getting any benefits out of being employed over a number of years. And then, of course, we do need to also delve into the topic of retirement savings and whether those retirement savings are actually adequate. And, of course, the big answer at the moment is no. I mean, the figure we've mooted over all these years is that only 6% of our population will be able to retire comfortably. My sense is that that figure is going slowly downwards, unfortunately.
That is scary. Yeah. And another number that's scary, Dr. Borchardt, is that people in South Africa will need to work until the age of 80. 80.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That is that is absolutely the scary statistic. And I know some of the work done, you know, by Sanlam in the Age of Confidence study and their campaign really shows that South Africans will need to work until the age of 18. And I mean, they've done some work around this. It's really a sobering projection, you know, and they've done some work looking at, I mean, our normal retirement age is 65. Mm. But with things as they stand at the moment, they also looked, they did a formula, they looked at, in order to retire comfortably at the age of 65, you need to be able to purchase your retirement savings, really need to be about 75% of your salary. But most South Africans really are looking at about 25% of that. Mm-hmm. So that's a heck of a difference. So they really looked at what, you know, some sort of a formula. They looked at this replacement ratios and how much longer South Africans would have to work after the age of 65. And the number that came up was 15 years, which is the age of 80, which, as I say, is really quite a sobering number. Yeah. Now, we can imagine that brings with it all sorts of dynamics and problems, and some of those 100% related to mental health and of course, other aspects which we can unpack.
Okay, let's move away from being scared and move to solutions and what we can do, I think, in small and big ways, bearing in mind what we've spoken about, that a lot of people, even if they are employed, have financial insecurity, are not feeling able to meet their obligations as it stands. Now we're saying, you know, in order to protect yourself, you need to spend on your retirement or you need to spend on your emergency savings.
Yeah, 100%. So I think there are obviously some things that we really can do, and I also again want to touch on what workplaces can do. You know, a lot of that is around financial literacy and just communication, and I think we do leave those conversations rather late in our lives. You know, sometimes we hit the 50s, people hit the 50s, and then they start thinking, oh gosh, pre-retirement stage, and I've really got to look at my finances now. But I think with workplaces are really instrumental and powerful. They've got a captive audience within the workplace, so they're very powerful in terms of ensuring that there is education and awareness and ongoing communication with employees. I think also just, you know, availing those kinds of, you know, education and awareness through digital tools and really mobile apps and you know, the things that sometimes add a little fun to things, and particularly young people, I think really goes a long way. I think also rewards and incentives are going to be quite critical if we're looking at what workplaces could do. You know, and then, you know, health and retirement, I think integration. Remember that it's not just retirement. It's not just really about the rands and the cents. It's also around that repurposing, you know. Mm-hmm. But how we do that, I think, are going to be critical conversations. However, my feeling is, and having done corporate wellness a long, long time, is that we really are starting those conversations far too late in the journey, in the, you know, of being within the workplace.
Okay. What would you say if someone is an employer listening now and is thinking, I don't want this to be my employees and I, how do I raise these conversations and how do I make sure that whatever level of business I own, my employees are well, whatever I'm paying them, they are able to, you know, move away from this financial insecurity or move away from the stress?
Well, I do think, as I said, that the financial literacy programs are absolutely key. Again, I've noted that, you know, just being able to have ongoing conversations about the benefits right from the beginning of entering employment and not leaving that until suddenly you find yourself at pre-retirement stage, and then it becomes a bit of a shock. I think so having those conversations quite early. So I've also seen how just unpacking benefits and employees understanding their benefits really goes a long, long way. One of the things we do quite a lot of within the Afrocentric group, and I'm going to say this, is just things as simple as sometimes decoding your payslip. We found that employees very often don't understand their payslip, and they're not even looking at it, or I want to say reading it, because I feel like you need to read it, you know. I don't want to use a nice word like peruse, but read your payslip, you know. Know what's going on in your payslip. Yes. Know what that deduction means. Something as simple as that really goes a long, long way. And so it starts for me with those ongoing campaigns and financial literacy campaigns, I think, really. You know, with the introduction of the two-pot system as well, you know, things like understand what the tax implications are. You know, what is the long-term impact of now withdrawing from your pension fund? You know, and in that way, employers really, really have a vital, vital role to play. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think we really, employers need to do more. I have no doubt.
Okay. And so we've spoken about the financial aspect of it. Mentally, yes, as an employee, you want to get away from this cycle of financial insecurity. Your company's doing what they need to do, but you also need to think about, I imagine, your whether you go to gym, which I don't understand people who go to gym consistently. I think they're the most incredible people. I can never get it right. Or you're taking a little walk around your neighborhood or around your yard, or what small sustainable things can people do outside of the finances and the planning and the retirement to make sure that mentally they are in a space where they are well and they are able to look at the difficulties that they have to deal with in a way that's not harmful, in a way that's, I don't know if progressive is the right word, but in a way that's good for them and their future?
Yeah. You know, it's, I think it's really, really become far more mainstream to, if I'm using that word correctly or incorrectly, to start speaking about mental health. And COVID came with a lot of nonsense and a lot of negative. Mm. But in a funny way, the positive thing was that suddenly it did put this thing called mental health in the center of our universe. Yes. And suddenly we started talking about it. And suddenly it wasn't that thing that someone else is dealing with. It's a thing we were all dealing with. Loneliness, anxiety, you know, those things. It put it right into the center of our universe. And that in itself, I think, really creates, a platform for us being able to speak and to have those difficult conversations and deal with stigma. Because I think one of the big things about not talking about any of this, you know, was really around stigma. And it's not the big things we do, you know, it's the small things we do. And it's precisely what you were alluding to, you know, it's smelling the flowers, it's walking, you know, it's doing the little things that, you know, just give us joy in our life. And that really is what mental health is all about. But again, I'm going to come back to the workplace conversations. Education goes a long way to people really understanding things. And then, of course, when we're structuring our benefits, I have to say that wellness programs and employee assistance program also go a long way towards assisting people that are really in distress as one of the biggest, I would say, support structures, and also really just that foundation to assist employees. And we're seeing, but certainly after COVID, we saw far more investment in these programs, partly because, let me say it, I think employers and corporates were humbled by it was a health pandemic. It was a health thing, and suddenly we needed to deal with health and mental health and all of that. And so definitely we're seeing far more traction on wellness programs as well as employee assistance programs to assist employees with the issues. But there's a lot that can be done around mental health. I mean, I could probably just go on forever.
I mean, I think you should.
You know, I really could go on forever. I mean, I do think companies really have to look at what their strategies are around wellness and And in the middle of that is mental health. I think mental health, physical health certainly comes up very, very high. And I have to say, thirdly, financial health. Mm. You know, if we deal with these three big ticket items, we're really positively influencing employees' lives on a daily basis. And we, I mean, we see it in our company. We get our executives quite involved, and it's wonderful to hear that executives do get involved, because that's how you actually drive a culture of well-being ultimately within workplaces. So, so I think it's about putting budgets there for these programs, you know.
We didn't touch on digital wellness. And I think because so many of us are so connected to the phone, so many of us use the phone, I think unnecessarily even. I'm including myself in there. You don't have to pick up your phone each hour, but somehow we do. There's a way then of making sure that the information, those conversations you were speaking about, as well as tips around the protections you were speaking about and making sure you're okay, are accessible on the phone or on the device.
Yes, 100%. And so I suppose you're quite correct. There is the aspect of digital wellness as well. And so, of course, we do need to look at, you know, sometimes disconnecting, very difficult in the world we live in, you know, and issues around work-life integration, you know, because always being on also comes with its own set of problems, of course, burnout and all of those things. So I think those are quite critical components of wellness programs and just generally wellness for citizens, you know, is that we sometimes do need to look at sometimes being off and not always being glued to our screens and so on. However, you must also think that counseling these days, we also now have virtual counseling. And, you know, we don't always have to be face-to-face with our therapist even. And, you know, we track in our company, we do track, you know, completion rates for people going through our counseling. And it was quite interesting for me, you know, that completion rates for virtual counseling is actually higher. So there's also something positive in that somehow, you know. So, yeah, that was an interesting statistic for me when we looked at that metric, actually.
All right. Dr. Marion Borchard, Senior Manager and Head of Wellbeing at Afrocentric, a Sanlam subsidiary. Thank you for your time on Kaya Biz this evening, talking to us about the role that finances play on our mental health, talking to us about how to think about the next steps, protecting ourselves, moving away from those vicious cycles that sometimes we can fall into. Really appreciate your time on Kaya Biz this evening.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.